You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are now listening to the Ride or Cry podcast.
Well, how have you been?
I've been good. Yeah. Hanging out, doing whatever I can do. You know, there's not really like a whole lot going on in my life right now.
Yeah.
We put the record out and that was good, but
it's so good.
Now it's like,
I'm
thank
obsessed.
You. I appreciate that. Yeah. It was great to be able to finally put something out, but I also feel like, man, I wonder how much different it would be if we were able to like tour right now and like actually do things surrounding the record. So
yeah,
it is what it is.
I know, it must be super weird because I feel like your music is so all about the energy of a show.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's like I have a lot of people who come up to me and say like, oh, you know, like I liked your music before, but like seeing it live was like really what like tipped me over the edge of like being like a really like huge fan. I was like, dang, like that's really cool. Thank you. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so for people who don't get to experience the live aspect right now, I think that potentially we could be losing out on people who may really enjoy this band, but maybe it's just the music itself isn't totally connecting because they're not getting that, you know, physical like experience, I guess. All we can do is hope for the best, you know, and hopefully things will turn around soon-ish.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, we can only pray at this point. I've known about you guys since like pretty early on. I would like to think that I was one of your first fans, but
yeah,
probably not, because you guys like formed in 2015,
yes,
Heather sent us Protection probably like very beginning of 2016. So I feel
okay,
like that's
cool.
That's like pretty early on, right?
Yeah, that's pretty early. I would go ahead and say that is like probably before most people knew who
yeah
we were.
Because I definitely for yeah a long time was one of those annoying people who was like, I knew about them before you, you know? Like, you know, when you like love a band and you're kind of like, oh, I want
totally
everyone to know them, but also they're just like my little like secret and it's so awesome.
Absolutely.
Like that was with you guys.
Yeah.
And then I was stalking Cody and Heather to like make sure that you guys come play emo night. Like I would just email them 24/7. I was like, please.
Yeah.
And then you guys did a few months later, and it's kind of what you were talking about. Like I already loved the music, but at the show, I mean, I was just like crying, and I don't know. It was one of those experiences that I'll never be able to describe, like how magical it was. And you could see in all the photos, you know, the crowd and the people in the front, like everyone's kind of crying, but they're also moshing and they're singing.
Yeah.
And it's just this, it was this really like magical moment.
Yeah.
And you guys have come back and like you did Emo Night Day with us and
mm-hmm
all this stuff. And it's just always been such a cool thing to like have you guys at Emo Night and for people
yeah
to see you for the first time or maybe already be a fan and see you and everything. So
yeah. No, we have loved playing Emo Night. Thank you guys for like allowing us to play so much, because it's been like really genuinely playing. I think so. We've played what, like three different Emo Night events.
Yeah.
The first one being Emo Night, the second one being Emo Night Day, and then the third one being like the Emo Night anniversary, I think.
I
might be wrong about that.
I think it was Emo Night, then the second year anniversary, and then Emo Night Day, which was like.
And okay.
Yeah. Later.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and I still have people come up to me at show. Well, I mean, not really recently, but like, you know, I've had people come up to me and be like, I saw you guys first at Emo Night and like, I had never heard of you, but like, it was so good. And then I started listening to your music and now like we come to shows. And I'm like, yo, like, that's so cool, because it, you know, I think that Emo Night is such like a perfect, I think stepping stone for a lot of people. I think some people maybe have kind of grown out of like that emo phase of their life, right? Where when we were all younger and kids, we all listened to the music that everyone spins at Emo Night. But then maybe as you grow up, you kind of aren't as connected with like the up and comers in the scene, right? And so I think for a lot of people, it was like a really good way for them to like be exposed to like, oh, like who are like the new kids on the block who are like really doing exactly like the type of music that we love and that we've always listened to, but maybe haven't had a chance to like find out about otherwise. So for us to be able to play Emo Night and like be in front of like a whole new crowd of people who probably didn't know our music, that was like such a cool thing for us. And it was really, I don't know. I've always loved playing Emo Night. I would love to do it again. Whenever you guys are back up and running,
please
let us know.
It would be so fun to hear this new album like that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why we started that, having bands at the Echo is just exactly what you said, to showcase newer up and coming artists and not just have, you know, the bands that everybody already knows about. So it's been
exactly,
and it's been fun for us to hear new music and be introduced to new music as well. So
totally. Yeah.
But yeah, so I saw you at the Breonna Taylor protest for a moment. And I literally can't recognize anyone, like no matter what, even my friends. Sometimes I'll take a photo at a protest and then look back at it the day after, and then I'll see three different people in the photo that I took that I know.
Totally.
Just can't. So I'm glad that you were able to see me and Ashley, but have you been going out a lot?
So I have been gone. I've been out of LA for like most of the summer.
Okay.
I didn't get back to LA until like 2 weeks ago. And so I was going to, I went to a couple of protests. Basically I was in the Northwest with my parents because, when shit hit the fan and everything went kind of crazy in LA, I was just like, I'm going to get out and I'm going to go like hang out with my family because they live like out in like a really like rural area. There's like not very many people around them. And it just felt like the safer thing to do. So yeah, I left. I was in the Northwest for like 5 months. So I didn't like, I was pretty much there through the thick of it, like with George Floyd and like most of the protests that were going on. And there was a few small protests in their area, but it's also an extremely conservative region. And the bulk of the protests were like anti-protest protests, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was just like a bunch of fucking like Trump losers, like just being annoying. Anyway, I did get to go to a couple protests while I was there, and that was awesome. The first of which was actually really big. I mean, like way bigger than I would have expected, because we drove into Washington. My parents live in Idaho, and we drove into Washington for the first protest, and it was fucking huge, which was amazing. But yeah, I mean, after that point, they were definitely much smaller, a little bit more low key. So I missed out on a lot of like the big LA protests, which I was definitely, you know, a little disappointed about, because I would have loved to have been here and been showing my support and definitely been surrounded by the people and my friends that, you know, I care about and who also, you know, care about the world and see things similarly to myself and, you know, that sort of thing. But since being home, that was the first protest that I had heard of since being back. And I was like, all right, we're going, like it has to happen. And I think it was, it was great. It was smaller than I was expecting, I think. I think that many of the protests out here have been much bigger than that, or at least it looks like they have been.
Oh yeah, they've been way bigger for sure.
Yeah, I'm hoping that one is like the spark that LA needed to kind of pick back up again and start having some bigger protests again. So we'll see. I'm definitely going to keep going.
Yeah, that was the first one I've gone to at night. So I was kind of freaked.
Oh, really?
I was like a little bit scared at moments, which is probably irrational. Yeah. But it's also not irrational because some crazy shit has gone down at protests in general. So I don't
totally.
Know.
Totally. I have a friend of mine. His name is Eves. And he's like a huge advocate for just Black lives in general and civil rights. And he literally has dedicated his entire life to just like traveling the country. And he goes to protests every single fucking day, every day. And he's like constantly posting about his experiences there and the people that he meets and like just like what happens that the media doesn't show you, you know, the things that are kind of kept more under wraps versus like the things that they you know, broadcast and whatnot. It's really interesting to see. And I mean, the stuff that he posts about is just, it's fucking heartbreaking, man. People getting hit by cars, people getting shot. Like it's fucking crazy. So I mean, yeah, I think the anxiety is justified, especially going to a protest at night. I mean, when when things feel a little bit more gnarly.
Especially when we were passing by the police station and then there were helicopters. Yeah. I was like, fuck.
Yeah. it was definitely tense for sure. But I think it's also like, I think it's really important and it's good that we're out there and that we're putting ourselves kind of like in the face of that danger, because, you know, that's what it's like being Black in America every single day. And I'm going to try and do my best to show my solidarity with that, you know? And if it means that I'm going to feel uncomfortable, then fuck it. I'd rather feel uncomfortable and be there in solidarity than not, you know?
Oh, 100%. 1,000%. Yeah. I feel the same way. Yeah. That's why I've been going out as much as I possibly can. I totally agree with that. So I feel like one of the positive things about, or a couple of positive things about what's going on right now, obviously, like, you're not able to tour and we're not able to throw emo nights and we're kind of, you know, stuck in our homes. But yeah. I think in terms of especially putting out music as a fan, it's been so cool to be able to listen to it from song one to the last song and, you know, yeah. kind of consume it in the way that artists put it together and it's meant to be consumed. Sure. Whereas in real life, you're kind of like, you're like in the car and you listen to one song and then 2 hours later, you'll put on a different song. So that's been right. really cool. And in our Discord channel, I asked people if they have any questions for you. And one interesting one was, what's your ideal situation for someone to listen to this album in? Like, they asked very specific ones, like, what is the weather like? Like, where are you sitting? Are you wearing headphones? Like what is the ultimate situation you would put a fan in to be like, okay, listen to it here?
Okay, yeah, totally. I think that the ideal situation to listen to this record would be like straight up, like in a dark room, like in a comfortable position, whether you're sitting or you're laying in bed, whatever. I would definitely listen to it with like nice quality headphones, because there's so much more, there's so many more layers and so much more of the production that you can really hear when you have like good quality headphones that are kind of being able to produce all those different channels, right? With AirPods, you don't really get that, you know, like anything that's kind of like just kind of whatever quality, it's fine. You'll be able to hear it, but you won't be able to like really like experience the music. So I think if you have a nice pair of headphones, definitely do that. If you don't have a nice pair of headphones, okay, well, actually, let me finish that. So in bed or in a comfortable like chair or something in a dark room,
time of day,
good headphones, nighttime for sure.
Okay.
Light a candle or something, make it nice, give yourself some nice aromas. And then listen to it front to back. Do not press shuffle. Don't skip around. Listen to it from the very beginning and listen to it to the very end. Also, put it on as loud as you can comfortably listen to it. Because I'm an advocate for like loud ass music, not because like it's like fun to like hurt your ears, but because I think that you hear so much more of like what the record has to offer when you listen to it at like loud volumes. And that's just, I don't know. That's just how I feel about it. If you don't have access to good headphones, you can listen to it in your car, because cars sound systems are actually pretty decent, but just don't listen to it while you're driving, because like road noise, like will tend to interfere with like the audio of shit. I don't know. So that would be like, if ideal situation number one doesn't work, ideal situation number two is in your car, still in the dark, like in a nice area or something with like a, maybe like a nice view or something, but like, yeah, somewhere where the audio is going to be good quality is like the most important thing.
Yeah. Okay. I did most of the things you said, but I did listen to it during the day, but I had a candle. I was laying down. I had headphones on. Nice. So I did it. Great.
Perfect. You nailed it. You nailed the listening experience.
Yeah. I was listening to an interview that you just did where you said, kind of want to read it so that I don't misquote it, sure. that you're never going to write music that is digestible right away. And I thought mm-hmm. that was really interesting, because to me, that sort of means like you go in and you listen to it and I mean, okay, so when you first listen to a record, you immediately are like, oh, I love this song and I love this song. Like, I love number 2 and 8, for example, right? And then you go back a week later and you're like, oh, fuck, like 5 hits today.
Yeah.
So is that kind of what you mean, or is it more complex than that?
I think, yeah, there is, it's a little bit of both. So yes, definitely by like digestible, I mean, like on first listen, I don't think you're going to fully comprehend everything that is really being put into each one of these songs, because you just, you listen to different things each time that you hear the record, right? Like maybe the first time you listen through it, you're not really focusing so much on the lyrics. You're more so focusing on like the overall like sonic sound of everything, right? And although you could be like, oh, this song is really great, you might not actually hear like certain things about the song that like you could notice on later listens. And I think also by like digestible, I was more so referring to like maybe the people who didn't get it right away, because I think that there are some people who probably like hear it and they're like, oh, I'm hooked, you know, like immediately, like that was amazing, and like that's great if you're one of those people. But I think there's a lot of people who have heard this record and have been like, I don't know how to feel about this, because it doesn't sound like Feel Something and it doesn't sound like Outcome Things, and like I don't know if I like it, but like I kind of like it, but like I don't know. And I've seen a lot of that reaction of people just
really
being like, yeah, a lot of it. I've seen a lot of people kind of like be unsure of like how they feel about the record, which is fine. I just think that it's something where, you know, people, when you have an album as successful as Feel Something, right, where people kind of have developed this almost cult following, right, based on what a certain album sounds like, I think there's a level of expectation there to have the next album be similar or be something that is like still along the same lines or like gives them the same feeling, right? With this album, although some people might get that same feeling, I do think that it is a very different experience. You know, I do think that the songs as a whole and the record as a whole feel different than what Feel Something did. And so I think a lot of people were kind of like, oh, this didn't give me the same like initial reaction that Feel Something did. And it takes a few listens for them to be like, oh, this is actually great, I like this, or a few listens for them to be like, no, this isn't for me. And either option is fine. I don't care either way, because another one of the things that I think is that we're never going to write music that specifically caters to a certain demographic or a certain type of fan who wants to hear a certain kind of music. Like, we're always going to write the music that we write because it's what we like and what we believe in, you know?
Yeah.
And if the next record we decide to make a fucking dubstep EDM rock crossover, that's what we're going to do. That's what we like. Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I think by digestible, I just mean, it takes some listens to really determine your like true feelings for this record. Yeah. And if it doesn't, then great. But I think for most people it does.
Yeah. I mean, also, how boring would it be if it evoked the exact same feelings and emotions?
Totally.
like yeah. That would suck. And that's,
yo, that is that's exactly my sentiment about it as well. It's like, if you want the bands that you listen to always sound the exact same, then what is the point? You know, like if there's never any progression, the band's never going to grow. The band's never going to like, I mean, I guess maybe that's not true. Maybe there are some bands who have capitalized on a certain sound and have never changed that. And if that works for them, then great. But I just don't think that like good bands, in my opinion, are ever the bands that constantly stay the same. I love bands that have the ability to evolve and do something different with each release, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I feel like that also makes it more fun for an artist. I mean, I look at, like, I love Halsey because she just dips into every genre. She's like, today I'm gonna make a song with Post Malone, and then tomorrow I'm gonna be on a pop punk song with Machine Gun Kelly, and then I'm gonna write like the greatest pop song that's on the radio for 2 years, you know? So
straight up,
that to me sounds way more fun. Like, if I was a musician, that's what I would do. I would just be like, today I want to make an EDM song, so I'm going to fucking do
totally.
That. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what it's all about, is just doing. I mean, because yes, this is our career, and yes, this is our livelihood, but at the same time, this is just something that we also do because of the fun of it. You know, we are musicians because we like to make music, and we're always just going to make the music that makes us feel the best and makes us feel the most confident in what we've produced, you know?
Totally. Is there a song on the record that came out like the easiest? Like you just sat down and it just happened?
I don't know, actually. I don't think so. I think that a lot of these songs actually were kind of like slower to like get a vibe for. So how do I explain this? Basically, the guys, what they'll do is like, obviously we'll all get together and like we'll come up with ideas and stuff and like pitch them to one another. Like maybe Ira will have like a guitar riff, or like Spencer will have like some sort of pattern on the drums and he has like an idea for a riff that could go over or something. And we'll like get together and like we'll kind of like go through those ideas and then like start building, right? And then from that point on, like we build like a song structure, and then it's my job to take that song that we've kind of put together and then like write melodies and lyrics over the top of it. But I had a hard time with my lyrics on this record. And I don't even really know why. It just took me a long time to like get into the groove of like writing lyrics. So like there was like a probably like 3 or 4 month period where like we had, I don't know, like maybe like 5 demos that were like instrumental, 6 demos maybe, that just didn't have lyrics on them at all. And I think the guys were getting a little frustrated with me because they were just like, dude, just fucking put something on them, you know? But I was like, I don't know. Like I didn't know what to write about. I didn't know like how to express my emotions at that current time. And I think that was a lot of that had to do with the fact that I was nervous, you know, about following up Feel Something. And there was a significant amount of anxiety surrounding the idea that just like I had to outdo, you know, what I had done on previous records. And I had to say things that were impactful and meaningful and also like creative and different than what I've said in the past, and that sort of weight just kind of like was like hanging over me for a little while until I finally just like wrote the first song, and then it was like, okay, great, I'm like back in the groove, I can do this.
What was the first one you wrote?
I think the first one we wrote was Garden Eyes.
Okay.
And it was a co-write with this guy Andrew Goldstein. I don't know,
love if Andrew Goldstein. Yeah.
Yeah, super, super awesome dude. Amazing songwriter.
Yeah.
He works with like, you know, fucking Black Bear and All Time Low and like these big pop artists and stuff. And so for us to have the opportunity to write with him, it was like, this is huge. Like, this is amazing. Plus, he just comes from our world, mm-hmm. you know, like he's truly like a perfect representation of someone who has taken, you know, what the emo genre can give you and fucking skyrocketed because of it, you know, and now he's doing big things okay. with the biggest pop artists out there. Long story short, we're at his house. He brought up, like, we were listening to the song and he brought up the fact that it sounded like this one popular radio song in like the 2000s, or that it reminded him of like a popular radio song in the 2000s. And I don't remember the name of that song.
Okay.
But it goes, "Save me, I'm lost." You know that song? It's like, it was everywhere in the 2000s. Lord, I've been waiting for you. I'm paying eco. No?
No, I don't know.
Okay, well, it was like fucking huge.
Okay.
And I wish I could remember the fucking name of the song. I'm like spacing on what it's called right now. Anyway, he was like, this song reminds me of this. And then I was like, yo, that's really cool. And then we're like, all right, cool. Like, let's start writing. And we use that kind of song as like inspiration to like start these basic melodies off, right? And the song in the end sounds absolutely nothing like the song that we had gotten the inspiration from, but it was just that one spark, you know? It was that spark that kind of like allowed us to be like, all right, cool, like let's do some of these melodies, and like let's put this, you know, maybe like change this verse a little bit so it fits a little bit better with everything else that's going on. And yeah, it was super collaborative. It was super fun. The the dude is a genius. I mean, he writes such cool melodies and such cool lyrics and stuff. And then I don't think he had ever written with someone who writes lyrics as in depth as I do. I think pop is generally more surface level. And with my lyrics, just kind of diving into like really deeper shit. I remember I was like, I wrote the line, it's such a blissful disguise. And he looked at me, he was like, I've literally never heard anyone say anything like that on a song before. Like, that's really crazy. And I was like, is that a good thing? He's like, yeah, it's great. I was like, all right, cool. And he liked it. So I was like, all right, sick. Like,
well, yeah, imagine that line in like a super poppy song, you know?
Yeah, like it wouldn't work in like a Black Bear song. Yeah. So he was probably just like, whoa, this is like different.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was the first song we wrote. I know that I kind of went off on a tangent there, but to answer your question, that was the first song we wrote. And although it didn't come like super quickly, I think once Andrew and I sat down and started writing it, it was definitely like supernatural, not supernatural, but like super natural.
Nice.
That it like the way that it
supernatural,
works.
Supernatural. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
And then, yeah, after that point, like every song did kind of like come a little bit easier. And there was at one point when I was writing with Will, our producer, in the studio, and we wrote like 6 songs in 3 days, which is like the most I've ever written ever, which was crazy. And they all ended up on the record. So that was cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love, so the first time I had ever met Andrew was because we had Hawthorne Heights playing Emo Night, and he somehow found out.
Yeah.
And he's like their number one fan. And so he literally had, I think, 9 different people reach out to us from just like different angles of the industry to make sure that he got on the list. And I was like, yeah, that's like, so I got it. Like, we got it. He's on the list. And like throughout the day, it was just all these different people. I was like, God damn, like, you really love this band. I love that.
That rocks, yeah, dude. That's so,
it was
funny.
So funny. I always make fun of him for it because I've never in the history of Emo Night been hit up that many times for like one person to show up. So it was really funny.
Yeah.
But do you think that kind of helped where you said you were kind of stuck trying to write lyrics? Do you think it helped to collaborate with someone and sort of get a different energy to just kind of snowball?
Absolutely.
The
Yeah, we did. We did a few co-writes like that on this record, because it's always good to have another head in the game as far as like writing lyrics go. And I love my guys in my band, but they know this about themselves too. But they're not lyricists. They it's just not their strong suit. And so most of the time, like the bulk of the lyricism is on me, and that can get pretty overwhelming, you know. So we set up a few different co-writes. The second one was with this guy, Drew Folk. He is like a producer. He does like a lot of like more stuff in like the heavier scene, like metalcore stuff.
Cool.
But then he also works with some pop artists and does like he wrote with like Lil Peep and like did some cool kind of just like more, I don't know, hip hop realm stuff. We did a couple co-writes with him. Those went really well. And then the third round of co-writes we did was with Jesse Barnett, who is the singer of Stick to Your Guns. Because he has a side project called Trade Wind that's like really cool, like kind of like emo alternative kind of like vibey stuff. Super, super different from Stick to Your Guns. But every song is just like so good. And we were just like, damn, like, we should hit him up and see if he'd be down to like write together. And so we wrote a couple songs with Jesse and obviously co-writing with Will, our producer, when we're in the studio is always like a big thing too. He again is like less of the lyric guy, but still has really good ideas. So yeah, I think it's good. I always like having someone to just, even if they're not helping me necessarily like, you know, figure out what lyrics I'm going to put where or like how to say something. It's good just to have someone to bounce ideas off of who's also good at creative writing. So I could be like, hey, what do you think about this line? And then they could be like, oh yeah, I like it. But like, what if you said it more like this? Mm-hmm. And then it just creates a better dialogue for, I don't know, creative, interesting songwriting.
Yeah. Or I feel like even just encouragement, how you said Andrew reacted so positively to that one line, just to have somebody be like, yeah, that's sick. You don't get that when you're by yourself and you're maybe feeling discouraged and nothing is coming out. Even just like having someone assure you that you're going in the right direction, I'm sure is super helpful.
Yeah, totally.
I love that.
It's it's awesome. It's cool. I would definitely consider doing some more co-writes on our future albums as well. And I would love to start co-writing with more people in like the pop realm, because I think it's such a cool avenue to kind of blend the two genres together, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it was like the end of last year you posted your favorite albums or whatever. And I think I saw Julia Michaels in there, right?
Oh, I
like that would be Julia Michaels. The ultimate collab.
Dude, I love her. We saw her,
at the Fonda?
Either the end of last year. Yeah.
Yeah, I was there.
Was that this year?
No.
I can't remember.
Oh, actually, I don't know why I'm laughing no as if I'm sure of this, but I feel like it honestly might have been
this year.
You think?
It was either the end of last year or it was like January of this year.
Yeah.
Or like maybe. I think it might have been. I don't fucking know.
I somehow feel like it was like the end of last year, but it was it was so good. I almost felt like it was like an arena show that somehow got compressed into a Fonda show.
I love her.
Me too.
She's so, so talented and she's so good at what she does. And even just like the stuff, like not even her own music, like the music that she writes on for other artists, I can always pick out when it's a Julia Michaels song.
Yeah.
Like, There's a few Selena Gomez tracks that are like heavily written by Julia Michaels. There's a couple Taylor Swift tracks that were written by Julia Michaels. And every time I'm like, that's a Julia Michaels mm-hmm. melody. I know that for a fact. And then like, I'll go look and she'll be one of the writers credited. And I'm like, I fucking knew it. And yeah, she's just, she's so good, man.
Yeah.
Oh man, that'd be amazing. I would love to write with her. If you know anybody who knows her, let me know.
I've been trying to get a hold of her, honestly. I guess not that hard though. I haven't like really, really tried, but I want her to come to emo night because she's so emo. She's totally. The most emo ever. Like she's more emo than like emo artists.
I know, dude. That'd be amazing if she played at emo night. I would die.
Oh my god, I would absolutely die.
Yeah, she rocks.
Yeah, and when Selena Gomez came out, I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. Yeah. And how and her band, how they, I don't even know what you would call it. They like switched up their instruments to be in different positions or what. I don't even know what the technical term for any of that, but I've never seen that before. And they had like choreographed moves and shit.
The choreography was crazy.
Crazy.
That was something I hadn't seen from a band before either, which was really sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. That show definitely was a highlight. One of my favorite shows that I've been to.
Yeah.
But yeah,
and I remember even that day I was like, oh, I'm kind of tired. Like, I don't know if I want to go because I love her, but I also just go to shows so much. Well, now I miss
totally.
It, but you know, it's just part of our job and everything just to make sure we like keep up with everything and go to shows. And so I remember that night I was like, I don't know, like I want to go. And then I'm so glad I went because I was blown away. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, totally.
I also wanted to talk to you about, I saw that you are diving into the world of tattooing, which is really fucking cool.
Yeah.
What has the process of that been like? Like, how long have you wanted to do it? And what's that like? Because I don't even know what goes into any of that.
Yeah. So actually, tattooing has the tattoo world and like the community around it is something that I've been involved in for a really long time, just because I love tattooing. I love the culture around it. I love how tattoos look. I love it, everything about it. And it was something that I've been involved with ever since even before I turned 18, I would like go with my friends who are already 18 and like while they would get tattooed and stuff and just hang out in like the shops and stuff and like make friends with the artists and whatever. Did I just pause?
No, you're good.
Okay. My screen went black for a second, so I was like, oh my God. Anyway, and so when I was in college, after, like before I had had the opportunity to play any like music or anything. I was in college studying visual journalism. I was like trying to get my journalism degree so that I could work on like documentary films and stuff. And while I was in college, I went to school in a city called Ventura, which is just like an hour and a half or so north of Los Angeles, a little beach town. And there was like one major tattoo shop, like in the city. It was like right on Main Street downtown. And I would just go in there every weekend and get tattooed by their apprentice. His name is Justin. And I just became like really good friends with him. And then also the shop owner, Tanner. And at one point I even like did like a miniature documentary on Tanner for like a class project thing. I don't know. It was one of my assignments in school. And so, yeah, like I just like I got really close with them. And then at one point Tanner was like, you know, we could maybe have you come work at the shop as like a shop help. And typically like that's how you kind of get your foot in the door to like start an apprenticeship is like you start as shop help. And you kind of like do like the bitch work for a while and clean and get coffee for people and whatever, but you pay your dues that way. And then that can lead to like an apprenticeship. And then when you have your apprenticeship, then it's like, all right, cool. Then you really get to like buckle down and learn and then hopefully eventually become an artist. But I was so busy with school at the time that I was like, there's just no way, you know, there's no way I could dedicate the amount of time that this needs to, be able to like actually take it seriously.
I mean, yeah, especially going to school for journalism, because I went to school for journalism too. You're not just like going to school and reading books and taking tests. You straight up have to like go out and interview people and film shit and edit it. And it's like a full-time job itself.
Straight up. Like every week I was covering somebody else. And it was like, we just kind of had to go and find people, you know, we would be given prompts as far as like the types of people that we would be doing, like covering stories on. So it would be like, you know, working class or something. And like, that was when I did my little documentary on Tanner, because I considered that working class. I mean, he's busting his ass every day tattooing, even though he's an artist, it's still like, you know, it's a gnarly job. And so like, I did like my documentary on him. We had like, basically like different profiles that we had to do on like musicians and stuff. And I don't know, it was like, it was crazy, but you're right. Journalism is an intense degree to like, to really be able to have any sort of free time with.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so I didn't end up taking that opportunity, and it was something that I always kind of regretted, you know, because I was like, man, I really wish I had the time to be able to see that through. And then eventually, obviously, you know, I dropped out of college so that I could play music. Movements became a thing. We toured nonstop for like 5 years. And the whole time, obviously, I mean, I was still getting tattooed. I was still making friends with tattoo artists around the country. I have a ton of close friends who are tattooers who have been like, well, if you know, maybe if you move out to this random state that I live in, that, you know, you can start an apprenticeship out here. And I'm always just like, I would never live there. So why would I do that? And so it was just, it's one of the things I've always been surrounded by. And at the end of, actually, I guess like midway through last year, I made some connections in California, and one of the people who I was getting tattooed by, we just again became friends, and I told him how much I had been wanting to tattoo forever. And he was like, dude, you know what? Like, if this is something you're serious about, like, let's talk about it. Let's get serious. And it ended up being a thing where, he offered me an apprenticeship position, and I started doing that like near the end of last year, and then coronavirus happened. And I was like, fuck, like I was so close, you know, so damn close. And it was something that I didn't want to post about until I felt really ready. Because I had been like working on my apprenticeship for probably like 4 or 5 months before the pandemic hit.
So what does that even mean? Like working on your apprenticeship?
Being an apprentice means that like you're obviously still learning, and there with tattooing, learning really just requires doing it, and you just have to continuously tattoo. And usually apprenticeships start with like you learn the basics of like drawing and painting, but I've been painting since I was like in high school. I started painting Tattoo Flash when I was in high school, so I already had like the basics of that pretty much down. But yeah, you basically start with like drawing and painting Flash, You start working your way up. I started tattooing fake skin at first, which it is not like tattooing real skin.
Where do you even get fake skin? It was like on Amazon.
You can order it on Amazon.
Oh my god!
Yeah, wait. it even comes with, like, so you get like a sheet of fake skin. It's like maybe like that thick, and then it comes with these little straps, so you can literally put it on someone's arm and then like strap it to them, so that you get the feeling of like tattooing on like a, you know, like a surface that's like round. You know. Wow. Anyway,
I had no idea.
So. Yeah, it's pretty weird. So I started like tattooing with fake skin and just kind of like getting my shit together that way, getting comfortable on a machine. Tattooing with a tattoo machine, that was the stupidest way to say that. Using a tattoo machine is like unlike any other medium of art I've ever tried. It is such a fucking weird thing to get used to, because you have this kind of oblong, you know, heavy thing that's like heavier on one side than it is on the other, and you're trying to hold it while it's also vibrating in your hand. And it's just like the first few times that I tried to like tattoo, I was like it was like so gnarly.
Yeah, I would be so scared.
My hands were just fucking shaking all over the place, and yeah, it was crazy. So, but anyway, that's kind of like how you work your way through an apprenticeship, is you start at the bottom and you slowly work your way up. And I was able to start tattooing on real skin before the pandemic hit, which was great, because had that not happened, I probably would have been way, way further behind in my progress as a tattooer. I kind of did all that. Then the pandemic happened and I had to put it all on hold for a while. But just recently, my mentor was like, hey, like, we're going to try and like start, you know, slowly reopening the shop. Obviously putting in place some pretty hefty, you know, rules and regulations as far as like how many people could be in at a time, you know, distance and masks and face coverings and all that shit. Oh my gosh, cute. So he told me that like the other, I guess it was like a week ago, and I was like, dude, like, fuck yeah. And he was like, do you think you're ready to like start talking about it? And I was like, absolutely, man. I've been waiting for the go ahead from you. And he was like, yeah, man, I think you should start posting about it. And I was like, all right, great. So yeah, put it on in Instagram. My fucking tattoo page got like 4,000 followers in one day.
So which cool. Was
psycho, dude. It was so crazy. I had a significant amount of dates available for October, and they all filled up really quickly. And
that's so cool. Yeah,
it's cool. It's awesome. It's great to be an apprentice and have a clientele, you know, and I'm extremely privileged to be in a position like that, because so many people who start apprenticing, you know, they maybe get an appointment a couple times a week, you know, because it's hard. It's hard to get appointments as an apprentice because you haven't established yourself as an artist yet. And I still have a fuck load to learn. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that will never stop. I'm always going to continue learning, but like, man, I mean, I'm nowhere near ready to be considered like a full tattoo artist, but I'm really thankful to be able to be tattooing as an apprentice and like working on that craft, so that eventually in however long, you know, a year's time, maybe hopefully less, but probably a year's time, I will have enough experience under my belt to be like, all right, I am officially like a tattoo artist, like as well as being a full-time musician. Like this is my second career, and hopefully something that I can continue to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah. That's so sick.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like you cool. could like combine it's, touring with doing this, like go, you know, hit people up in certain cities absolutely. And be like, I'm going to do an hour yeah. of tattooing here or whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be amazing. I've already had a couple people, you know, talk to me about like, if we tour through certain cities, you know, potentially having a day where I do like a guest spot somewhere, at like a shop in whatever city it is that we're in. And, I could, you know, book a couple appointments for kids to come get tattooed over there. If they, you know, if they're not able to travel to California, being able to tattoo in a place like Boston or fucking Nashville, you know, like, it would be really cool. So
you just we'll combine see. The it's, two and you tattoo while you perform.
Yeah. I have like a little segment of each set.
Just where like I'm, live like, some art.
Random person on stage. And I'd give him a little tattoo on stage. That would be crazy.
Yeah, I think Morgan did that once. Yeah.
No way.
Mm-hmm, we were DJing and somebody came up. But, you know, Morgan doesn't give a shit what he has on him at this point. Yeah. Like, he's so covered and he's gone, like, over other tattoos. So he doesn't care.
Yeah.
But I think somebody came out with a gun and, like, just started tattooing something over something simple. But yeah, I was like, you're That's insane. So this is crazy.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. But you know, it's like emo night's also so crazy where people are just shaking the table and everything's collapsing and everybody's wasted.
Oh my
and
gosh. So yeah. It's just chaotic.
Not the right environment, but
absolute chaos for a tattoo. Yeah. But I mean, I respect it. That's
still sick. No, totally. He's all about that shit. Well, that sounds awesome. I feel like once this is all over, because we did this thing once where we teamed up with a tattoo shop and we had anyone who wanted to have a grave tattoo, like our logo, come and like, I think it was like for 4 hours, they could come and like get that tattoo. So we could do that with you and do like a part two.
That'd be amazing.
It'd be so fun.
Yeah, that would be so fun. I would love that.
Yeah, because we also made a flat, what are they called? Just like a flash sheet or just a flash?
Flash sheet.
Yeah, so we also had that so people didn't have to get our, we weren't like, you have to get our logo. But I think there were like 10 options and it was one of the most fun days ever.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Did you get one?
I did. It's right nice. Right below my Lil Wayne tattoo.
Awesome. Yeah. That's so sick.
Yeah, I don't have many, but I think that's where I'm going to stop. For sure. Because
okay,
yeah.
Cool, nice.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. This Absolutely. Album is so fucking good and I'm so glad you guys put it out. And yeah, we'd love to just like have you back at emo night whenever shit is real again.
Definitely. Yeah. Babs, thank you so much for having me. Obviously I love you guys and I totally am stoked to do anything with emo night and you all. So
yeah.
Anytime that you guys need anything from us or want us to be participating in anything, we're down.
Hell yeah. I love that.
Cool.
All right. Have a good weekend.
All righty. Yeah. It's good to talk to you. Stay safe. You too. All right.
Bye.
Hello. And welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.